FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome, and you are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Carrie Lutz, and today is Monday, August 6th, 2018. Well, hey, as always, we invite you to be part of the show, and you can do that easily just by emailing us whatever is on your mind to kl@carrielutz.com. Hey, Will. Over the weekend, I did something. First time I've done it since I'm a Floridian. I took an airboat ride through the Everglades, and it was amazing. The alligators were coming right up to the boat. It was just an incredible experience. And then, of course, it started to rain, but it was so hot, you didn't mind the rain because it cooled things off. Well, hey, markets, particularly precious metals, have definitely cooled off. Let's talk with our good friend, Bob Hoy, and figure out what the heck is going on. Bob, welcome back.
Good to be with you, Carrie. What is going on? Well, the big picture for us is that the bubble, this fantastic financial bubble, may have peaked in December, January. And just to back up a bit on that one, in our October 4th edition, concluded that the whole of the world was going to get bubbled, including the Dow Jones. And then the other work we did in early October was that we called that many outstanding speculation had climaxed in the December-January window and assumed that, hey, it would do it. You know, you had the Nikkei in the last trading day of the year of 1989. You had gold and silver, I think it was January 20th or 21st, 1980. So there was good examples. I traced them all the way back to 1893, major peaks in the window at the end of the year. So then on December 19th, our technical work got what we called a sequential sell on the Bitcoin itself. And we hadn't had a signal like that on 2 years. So we figured that it would be the equivalent correction, possibly the top. Now, the senior indexes would follow, and they did, and have had a correction. Now, to bring it to date, we figured that the overall stock market would rebound out to about May and be assisted with what we call our friends of the bull market, which would be narrowing credit spreads, steep, a flattening yield curve, and favorable action in industrial commodities, all of which we got. And now we're looking for a decline in the general stock markets after August. So we're on track. Now, how this fits with gold is that our historical work we did a long time ago, we just took the price of gold in the senior currency terms and deflated it by the CPI, going all the way back to 1700. And then you've had the five major financial bubbles with the South Sea bubble in 1720, and then 1929 being number five. And on these, carry each of them, the real price of gold declined during the final couple of years of the financial mania. And gold shares, while they may have gone up during a financial mania, they underperformed. And then the speculation in the general stock market had its course and climaxed. And by the way, all five great financial bubbles crashed in the fall. So at any rate, then that releases the real price of gold goes up. And you don't really have to figure out what the dollar price is going to do. So now in our own recent experience in gold, we had that rally up until 2011, which was fantastic. And within that, gold's real price deflated, did go up as well. Then we had spectacular technical excesses recorded in that April in 2011. So, for example, on the silver-gold ratio, which we learned a long time ago, you got to follow it, is that when you do the momentum on it, the daily RSI, it tells the story. And in, I think it was April of 2011, that RSI got up to 92. And the only other time, Kerry, that it was as got up to 92 was in January 1980. So we pointed out that the sector, precious metals, was dangerous, and then sought comfort in saying that the bear market wouldn't be as bad as what followed 1980. Of course, you learn that whatever bear market you're in is always the worst one. So now what we're looking for is the gold's real price to motivate things in here. And the real price came down in on annual averages into 2016, and it's improving. And it's interesting that the long-dated treasuries blew out in 2016. We think that was a huge high. And then, of course, perhaps the major stock markets concluded in January, but we don't know until how it survives on the pressures that may appear this fall. So the way to look at gold, as I say, in the real price, is that in when a bubble concludes, the world begins to change, and then the real price goes up because everything then falls relative to gold. And I think it's Mother Nature working things out, because in a financial mania, you have tremendous issuance of expansion of credit. And you also have a whole lot of weird, fanciful, speculative items of credit come out, derivatives and all that sort of stuff. And then in the contraction, people avoid these things. So liquidity really does disappear in those fanciful credit instruments as well as the regular credit instruments. So with that contraction going on and the gold, the real price going up, of course, it relates to the profit margins of miners, and they can make more money out of mining gold when their costs are dropping and the price. As I say, what matters is the price of gold relative to their costs. And typically in the post-bubble contraction, this goes up. So, for example, like in 1929 bubble, and when it crashed, Homestake went down, I think, to 8.25. And then through 1931, you could have bought it at about $9 a share. And then by the end of 1932, before Roosevelt had started fooling around with the price of gold, so gold was still $20.67 an ounce. And where Homestake didn't make any money in 1929 because their costs were going up, they started to make money so that by the end of 32, with still on the $20.67, their earnings were up something like 130%, as was the stock, with no change in the price of gold. So to bring things to date here now is that if we go into a crisis this fall, the careful money will go to the most liquid items, which would be gold. You have tremendous liquidity. And then the other very liquid item has always been short-dated treasuries in the senior currency. So there will be in a crisis, there will be an increase in demand, investment demand for gold, but also there will be an increase in the bid for treasuries, and that means a bid for the dollar. So we're not looking for any terrific rallies for gold or any declines in dollar terms. It'll be just a back and forth struggle. But if you're in other currencies, say Canada, or euro or elsewhere, gold then would be going up in a storm, which is what most gold pundits figure. So it's sort of a different way, Carrie, of looking at it, just straight on the history, then rather than get into the current supply-demand. And it's always found it difficult to go to supply-demand analysis in gold or silver and then come up with a price. I think it's very frustrating. So anyways, we're not excited about the precious metal sector now, but we will get very excited at some point because every post-bubble contraction, the real price of gold has gone up. And then also I checked what base metals did in a post-bubble contraction in real terms. So I just took copper. You could get back to, I think, around 1820 on that basis with reliable numbers. And, of course, real price of copper goes up in the boom, and the real price of copper goes down in the contraction. And you've noticed lately copper's been quite weak, as the other base metals have been. So it eventually gold becomes the premier industry. And each of these great bubbles, like either 1720 or 1825 or 1873 was a good one, or 1929, it took about 20 years to correct the excesses in the credit markets. And that was essentially a 20-year bull market for gold's real price. And this is what we're looking for eventually here. Now, Carrie, you also have the regular, 3 to 4 year business cycle continues. Mm-hmm. But you would then have weak recoveries, which would be a setback for gold. And you would have stronger recessions for the general economy. And in which that's another time when gold would do well. And so what we want to do, of course, is get the entry right. And between our historical work in looking for, let's put it this way, it's highly probable that we'll have a liquidity crisis in the fall. And then everything hinges on that. And that would then be the start of the bull market in gold's real price. And then you'll have to have the entry into the gold stocks because they'll get messed up. If the big market goes down, so will the gold stocks. So between our historical model and our technical work, I think we'll be able to catch around the best moment for getting fully invested in the precious metal sector. So there's a lot of interesting stuff going on out there.
So liquidity crisis, is that going to center around the banking industry? Where are we going to see this hit?
Oh, yeah. You go back to the start of the Federal Reserve System, which promoters behind the Federal Reserve System, they were fearful of financial setbacks. And 1907 was a bad one, although it was called the rich man's panic. And that really then stimulated these paranoid bankers to form the Federal Reserve System. And the theory there was that they knew that with a financial setback, a recession would usually follow. So then the idea was that the Fed, as being lender of last resort, you wouldn't have a setback, and therefore you wouldn't have recessions. Mm-hmm. And the Federal Reserve opened its doors for business in January 1914, and there's been 18 recessions since. So
didn't work out.
According to their own design, it doesn't work.
Mm-hmm. So the effort to repeal the business cycle failed miserably. So
I like your line. I think I'll use it. Repealing the business cycle. Yeah.
Yeah. So coming up, so we're going to start to see this. You're thinking is fall. We're going to see this liquidity event take place.
Yeah. Here's what I've got the yield curve and back to 1857 and hand plotted by some friends of mine decades and decades ago. But at any rate, and now everybody's talking about the yield curve and they're worried about it flattening, which means right. Short rates are rising faster than long rates, which you get in a boom. But I don't worry about that. As long as it's flattening, it says the boom is on. And so long as short rates such as T-bills are going up, it means the boom is on. Right. And what you want to dread is when it reverses now. And the same on credit spreads. Mm. As long as they're narrowing, the boom is on. But you had... And of course, spreads are the difference between high-grade bonds and low-grade. And in a boom, everybody has confidence, so they're reaching for yield and buying the low-grade stuff. And you've had now the trend in credit spreads was narrowing until about 6-8 weeks ago, and it made an attempt to reverse and actually did. Do what we call the first breakout, and then now it's testing that low. And what in the past, such as 2007, that was critical was it was the second breakout to widening credit spreads, and that was in August. I think it was late August 2007. And then that then pushes off the problems. At the fantastic dot-com bubble in early 2000, the credit spreads and the yield curve virtually reversed as the market was blowing out. But if you look at it in more detail, because like in going into September 2007, the S&P almost made new highs. But you then, in that August, or maybe it was early September, you then had the second breakout in widening credit spreads, and then that pushed off the disaster. So I'm confident that our old tools will work, and our readers will have that advice. And what we're watching for is the second breakout in credit spreads. Now, the other one is the yield curve, which, as I said, is the difference between long end and short end. It's still on trend for flattening. And the pundits are very concerned that it might actually invert. And if you look back at 2007, it did briefly invert in, I think it was late 2006, and then it spent a lot of time just below actually inverting. And then when we look at our history of the yield curve, and you've had a few business cycles and credit cycles where the curve did not actually invert, it just approached, and the key thing was when it changes. Right. So in looking at the curve over the weekend, I would say that there's a tentative change going on, but you can't conclude that it actually has reversed. But for those of our listeners who are interested, you can look at the three-month treasury bill, you know, during each day, and it's around 2.02%. And if that comes down distinctively, then that's a trend change. For example, the three-month treasury bill went up and up and up during the 1929 boom, and it reversed in that June to going down, and that was the signal that the boom was over. I think, Carrie, when the T-bill rate is going up, and you're in a financial party, it's that the highly leveraged speculators are boring short. Mm-hmm. And then the kind of energy goes out of it, and then the T-bill rate comes down. Now, last week there was a headline story out of China that there'd been a shift. Money was heading into money market instruments like less than 1 year and away from the stock market. So, and I thought, speculators are changing in China, and the T-bill rate in the U.S. is still up. So now here's where it gets ironical, because in 2007, as the financial markets were getting a little stressed out in the summer, then you had the Wall Street pundits saying there's no problem because the Fed will cut interest rates. Mm-hmm. And that was what, it was the Fed cut, we don't have to worry. And that theory, I have no idea where, it's been around for a long time. But if you take a look at the history of interest rates and stock market bull markets, the interest rates fall in a bear market. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, in the worst bear markets, such as the last one was 2008, is when the short-dated interest rate in the senior currency fall the fastest.
Right.
So then what you've got is this double irony, is because the bulls figure that, interest rate's going to go, the Fed will cut, and we'll be happy. But the other thing, the other irony is that treasury bill rates, which is a market rate of interest, heads down. Mm-hmm. Then, a couple of months later, the Federal Reserve drops their Fed funds rate, or when you go back in history, it used to be called the discount rate. So here's history. Short-dated rates go up in a boom, mm-hmm. and they go down in a bust. So, the market's not nervous enough yet for some Wall Street pundit to come out and say, hey, the Fed's going to cut rates and everything will be okay. Well, of course, I'll write that one down and make a note with the date and whoever said it. So there's always something interesting to watch, isn't it?
Yeah, it's definitely, definitely interesting. So once all this chaos starts, then we're going to look at precious metals start rising, you think?
We're going to have the precious metal stocks will be the place to be in, because you get more leverage out of the equities than you do out of the metal.
Right.
And the party in the gold stocks will be terrific when it starts. But you take a look at some mining companies now. I always like the exploration side, and there's some very good work being done, but there's not much action in the stocks. And unfortunately, it won't be until the party in orthodox stocks blows out.
Right.
And then you have the problem with the big stock market going down, and you're not going to be able to put any gold stocks up in that kind of a storm. So I'm near term. The term is I'm cautiously pessimistic.
Yeah.
But it's on a path, Kerry, to what will be the start of a great bull market in the precious metals sector.
Yeah.
And I am old enough to live with my impatience. And at some point, we will go back to great markets for the gold sector. It used to be at the end of a bear market in precious metals that you would have the seniors recovering, and then the middling size, and then finally the juniors. But in the last couple of major lows, the seniors, middling size, and juniors all set bottoms more or less at the same time. Now, whether it does it this next time, I don't know. But my own inclination has always been I like the exploration side, and there will be some fantastic discoveries made. And also, the market will begin to really appreciate what expansions have been done or discoveries that have been made of recent. So, but again, we just have to wait for the opportunity. So, And then on the political markets, my God, this is just incredible what's going on.
Yeah. Yes, it is, isn't it?
When I look back on a couple of hundred years of parliamentary tradition in either England, in Canada, or the U.S., and there has never been an attempt by senior people in Department of Justice and in FBI attempt to depose a sitting president. It's, or in Canada's case, a prime minister, or in England's case, a prime minister. It just hasn't happened. Well, sure, back in the 80s, Mrs. Thatcher became unpopular in her own party, and they voted and ruled her out as leader. Now, that is parliamentary tradition, but you never have somebody at Justice or FBI.
Yeah.
Actively working to bring down a president. I think it's, is it close to treasonous?
I would say it's pretty close. Well, you could always make the argument that rather than legally depose presidents, we just dispose of them, like Kennedy, yeah. like McKinley,
Ooh.
Garfield, Lincoln. But yeah. You know, that's grasping for the conspiracy bandwagon
yeah, we'll,
a bit much.
Yeah,
we'll just leave that. But there's an argument to be made. But yeah, the actual thing of framing him up for betraying the country when it is in effect the people who are doing the framing, who are doing the betraying as well, that's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
I haven't seen that before for sure.
Well, you know, I was just a few weeks ago reading a popular history of the 1400s, and then I took a paragraph out of that. Really, what it was is that if the magistrate or the sheriff or whatever who was the legal functionary really wanted to get somebody, they did, and they would get a hold of one of their friends or a family member and actually torture them until they got the accusation about the bigger figure who they were after.
Mm-hmm.
Well, is this not going on in the Mueller
Paul Manafort
situation?
Paul Manafort.
That's right.
Psychological torture is taking place. It's fascinating to see. And, you know, that old song, John Barleycorn Must Die, you know, that's kind of what it's about there. Waiting in ambush and then, you know, removing your
adversary. It is the equivalent of then the medieval way whereby ambitious local magistrates looked after their political enemies. And here you have it again. I wrote a piece on it. I'll send it to you.
Yeah, I'd love to see it.
And it's evil. But the theme in the piece I took is that Mueller, he's decorated combat veteran.
Yeah.
Perhaps not an evil man, but with the struggle going on now between the forces, the control freaks, and the popular uprising, which is people having had enough of in your face and in your wallet government.
Mm-hmm.
This is monumental, and it's happened in the early 1600s. And the uprising will eventually win. But what Mueller is doing is playing the part, the role of, and the term I like, the deep state is accurate.
Mm-hmm.
And he is the functioning public man in this thing. And you know, in looking at the game, if the whole of the deep state side, this is their current opportunity to get rid of the of Trump, but Trump is the executive of the popular uprising, and they're not going to be able to cope with either.
No.
It's certainly getting very evil out there, and I think that I think it could turn. We've seen that in booms in the past, the left gets particularly busy and successful, and then when the boom fades, their energies diminish as well. And for example, the huge commodity boom in 1920, and then the unbelievable crash there. And in Soviet Russia, they turned from full-on communism to a sort of a form of socialism. So you can look for the abilities and determination of the left to diminish if this financial party rolls over. So this is where I tell my colleagues that in the political markets and in the financial markets, this is one of the most exciting times to be alert to it. I would say in 400 years, the last struggle was in there for this in between an overpowering state and the individual, who played out best in England in the early 1600s and actually took them right through to the glorious revolution of 1688 before they finally got rid of the last absolutist king. So here you've got absolutist parties, bureaucracies, but without an absolutist king. So the reform will be similar. So we live in very exciting times, Kerry.
Hey, so what about what's going on in Canada there? Your prime minister is not real popular right now, and there's been leaks saying that he deliberately wants to tank the Canadian economy. I don't know if that's true or not. But
no, it's
posited.
It would be ancillary, because he's not a bright man. The only reason why he got into it was an appealing figure with a name that liberals in Canada just love, Trudeau.
Yeah.
And the prime minister's office is unbelievably stupid, and I figure as long as he's in office, he will lose the next federal election. But the Liberal Party has terrific support in the populated regions in Ontario and in Quebec and in big cities such as Vancouver. You know, it's the urban socialist thing. Mm-hmm. So the Liberal Party and Trudeau can do great harm to the country, but it is not intentional. These guys really think they're doing a good job, and all they're doing was the late 1960s socialism that they did, that their equivalents did in the Liberal Party earlier. And
of course, miserably.
You know, he goes to meet Trump, I think it was in November.
Yeah.
And while he's there, he has press conference, and for Trudeau, he thinks it's very clever that first of all we're going to discuss human rights, and he was also discussing a very strange subject called toxic masculinity.
Yeah, well, he doesn't have to worry about that.
He wanted to get these virtue signaling out before cutting a trade deal, and they did the same thing going to China, and he wanted to have them change their ways and human rights and all that sort of stuff before. So these guys are in a never-never land. I mean, they're hopeless.
Yeah.
And I think the election of a very colorful figure, Doug Ford, as
Ontario,
as the premier of the province of Ontario, I take that as the start of the popular uprising in Canada. And
it's about time. It's about time.
And it's about time, I'll tell you. It'll be very welcome here, but it'll be, as in the U.S., an unbelievable shock to the establishment, which is so used to having its own way. And but of course, you know what's going on with President Trump is that you can compare him to Ronald Reagan. And I remember at the time the liberal Democrats were just frightened of Reagan. And then the media took on him on, and they threw mud at him, and that's where he ended up with the nickname as the Teflon president, because none of the mud that the media were throwing at him stuck. Now, he was a polite man.
Yeah.
And they worked him over just as hard. Now, in Canada, you had Prime Minister Harper for a decade was trying to reintroduce the concept of limited government to Canada, and the media went berserk over him and unrelenting. Now, Harper was a polite man. He was also a dull political figure. So even if Trump was polite, he would be getting the same workover because he represents the concept of limited government. So
that's really well, so we got to leave it at that. Bob, where's the best place to find you these days on the web?
Yeah, well, it's Charts and Markets. But the best way to get to me is just Bob Hoye, BOBHOYE.com. And just Google Bob Hoye and the .com thing, and it comes up. And we have a good website. And as of course, we've always got the historical side. And so Charts and Markets covers pretty well covers what we're doing.
All right. It's good to talk to you. Hey, as always, join the show, join the conversation, email us. And if we like it enough, we'll have you back on the show to talk about whatever it is you sent to us. Love getting your emails. The Twitter feed, the email address again is kl@carrielutz.com. Twitter feed @CarrieLutz. Facebook page, Financial Survival Network. Bob, it's always educational. It's always great to talk to you. Stay well, my friend.
Thanks a lot. You too. And we'll talk to you soon.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.